ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I don't know if you have a garden, but there's nothing better than picking your own vegetables and fruit and, you know, and oozing fig off the tree and just biting in this warm kind of sweet thing. This stays with me. You know, I am a chef. I am a foodie. I talk about it. I live it as well. And it's a really important element of the Palestinian kitchen.
A home garden. The taste of a freshly plucked tomato or plum, some fresh mint, basil, thyme, making that short journey from soil to seasoning. It conjures a sense of comfort and of home. But bring the word Palestine into your musing, and the picture might change.
Returning now to one of our top stories, the Gaza ceasefire has now been in place for more than 24 hours. Food, medicine and shelter are all still in dire supply as only a trickle of aid has been allowed into the
air. We returned yesterday and found the house destroyed. There are no necessities of life here. No water, no food, no drink.
On a dusty dirt road in the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunis, some children chase a truck past the remnants of bombed-out buildings. Others set up a makeshift stall on the ground in the rubble. The beans are for a shekel, a child shouts out. The lentils are for a shekel. Palestinians in Gaza say they're struggling to access basic supplies despite an agreement to increase aid delivery as part of the ceasefire deal.
When you say Palestine or Palestinian, you automatically think of what the media kind of show, which is people dying, being starved, being bombed. But there's other aspects and other sides to the Palestinian and Palestine.
Sami Tamimi is perhaps one of the world's best known Palestinian chefs and authors. He came to prominence in partnership with the Israeli-British chef Yotam Ottolenghi. They opened the first Ottolenghi Deli together in London and several restaurants. They co-authored two cookbooks, including Jerusalem. It was an influential bestseller. It won the James Beard Foundation's International Book Award. Sami's new book, Bustani, is inspired by the food of home. In one sense, the food of all our homes, the food we can grow in a garden or forage nearby, but also his home, Palestine, a place with a rich and resourceful culinary culture.
I am fortunate enough to grow up there and have a lot of these things almost engraved in me. And through food, it's my language and it's my way to connect with the rest of the world. And my intent with Bustani and before that Palestine is in a way documenting some of these aspects of Palestinian and Palestine life, really.
I'm Jonathan Green, and this is Every Bite from ABC Radio National. It's all about food and the places where food, culture, science and history collide. This week, Sami Tamimi's Palestinian Garden.
You're a bit loud.
Oh, have you got a knob on your table, or is there something you can turn down?
I have somebody coming to help with the volume slightly.
For your headphones? Or
it's early evening in Australia, which means Sami has gotten up bright and early to join us from a studio in England. And although he grew up in East Jerusalem's old city, he's called London home since 1997.
Talk again.
Hello, hello, hello.
Yeah, that's better.
Am I better?
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you for coming in bright and early. That's greatly appreciated.
I normally wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning anyway, so.
Ah.
It's a restaurant's life where, you know, for years I had to be in the kitchen at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I need also my time in the morning, just kind of sit and have a coffee and sit with my dogs and just reflect before I start my day. My name is Sami Tamimi. I am a Palestinian-British chef, restaurateur, and food writer. I run between London and Umbria in Italy at the moment because I have two homes, which is lucky me. Yeah, and I just finished writing a wonderful cookbook called Bustani. Bustani in Arabic means my garden. It's a vegetarian cookbook to celebrate the diversity and the food and the colorfulness of Palestinian food and heritage.
When you say my garden, Sami, what are you referring to?
I grew up in Jerusalem and Palestine in the 70s. I was a kid then. And I have all these wonderful memories of the place, the food, the connection to the land, the seasonality. Foraging was a big thing, is still a big thing in Palestinian heritage and tradition. And I remember my parents and even my grandma kind of taking us out to hills of Jerusalem and different parts of Palestine to forage for seasonal greens and berries and seeds, which stays with me quite a bit. And with all the Israeli restrictions on foraging, it kind of really important to talk about it because our land is shrinking and people are kind of displaced. And many of the young generations in Palestine and in the diaspora don't have the knowledge, but also the memories that I had. And I thought it would be really important to talk about it, but also connect them with the recipes that I put in Bustani.
How would you characterize the food in Bustani and in Palestinian cuisine? Does it come from a certain place or ethos?
I mean, it used to be one region, which is Syria, Lebanon, and Palestine. And there's quite a lot of similar dishes. Syrian food tend to be kind of more fruity and sweet and sour, where Lebanese and Palestinians are very, very close. It's a little bit more robust and also really kind of using or utilizing every thing that grows around. Sometimes they are really humble dishes, like, I don't know, we're just kind of thinking of dandelion that been just kind of sauteed with a little bit of garlic and then a bit of crispy caramelized onions on top and a squeeze of lemon. And some of these dishes are really kind of connected to what grows around. People don't waste things, it's just kind of, this is also, foraging is very kind of important aspect of it. But also Palestine was divided into region. Each region has its own kind of specialities of dishes and ingredients, which nowadays we lost it. Everybody cooks everybody's dishes because the land actually really getting smaller and smaller every year because of the way annexing Palestinian lands and homes.
So vegetables and foraging, these are things intrinsically of place, of the land.
Yeah. We are losing a lot of our indigenous fruit and vegetables. Palestinians naturally are farmers, and their connection to the land is quite rooted and kind of deep. But because of the lack of being able to farm or even get to their lands, they have to go and buy their vegetables and fruit. And normally it's an Israeli kind of industrial vegetables and fruit. I remember what we call, I mean, it's the translation to it is kind of organic, but not in a modern kind of sense of organic. baladi, which is something that grows in your backyard garden or in your field. And some people will take it from the villages and move to bigger cities like Jerusalem, Nablus, Ramallah, and sell it. And they are seasonal things. And Palestine is a hot country, so seasons can get quite short. It's a bit like Australia, where when you have tomatoes, they come for a few weeks and then they disappear. And people, if they grow it or buy it, they celebrate it. They want to eat it in as in many ways as possible, but also keep it by fermenting and pickling and drying, and nowadays also freezing to keep it for the rest of the year. And this is something that I also talk about in Bustani. The pantry is really important for the Palestinian kitchen because there are little things that add but also help dishes. And they come really handy when you have people around to pull out all these things from jars and bags and the freezer and enhance the dishes.
What are those key vegetables, the vegetables of your Palestine?
We are lucky because we almost have everything. The key ones are tomatoes and aubergine or eggplants, wonderful courgettes. We have one type of cauliflower that, unlike the normal cauliflower, is quite huge, big, and slightly fluffy and yellow. And it comes once a year, and people just go crazy for it. Lots and lots of greens and herbs. I mean, things like dandelion and spinach, wild asparagus, they all kind of native to this land.
Mm. What do people lose, do you think, in food culture when food becomes universally available, when tomatoes are always present?
This is something that I talk about a lot in my kind of conversation, where in the West, people really losing the connection to seasonality. And to seasonality, for me, is also the connection to what actually grows in your land or in your country. I mean, I live in London and, you know, people want strawberries, asparagus and tomatoes all year round. And some of the stuff come from Peru and from Mexico. Obviously, it's industrialized, but also it's always picked before it's kind of ready to be eaten. Mm. And asparagus that travels so long in water, it looks pretty, but it tastes of nothing. I remember when I got in the 90s to the UK and really celebrated the season of asparagus. And only a few people now in the food industry do that. You see it in the market, but people are not really aware of it. And I worry about the kids, because when you have products in the market or in a supermarket all year round, kids lose this connection. And this is where, you know, the bad habit of eating things that are not in the season, first of all, you don't appreciate it. Mm. In Palestine, tomatoes are very short season because it's so hot, they get burned, and people buy a lot of them or grow them and pick them and, you know, do, like I said, enjoy eating them, but also preserve them for the rest of the year. But they know that the season is going to finish soon, and that's it.
Familiar foods that are seasonal and locally sourced can be such a comfort, can't they? And Sammy is describing a deep connection here between Palestinians and the edible plants of their homeland. So, access to arable land, orchards, and the freedom to forage is clearly indispensable to those living in the region. Even for Palestinians living outside the war zone, access to farmland and orchards has become a flashpoint.
Thousands of olive trees once stood on the eastern edge of Al Muraya. Last month, they were ripped out of the ground.
All this area, over there, the military cut down the trees on security grounds. But this place here, what's the connection to the security grounds?
The Israeli military said a Palestinian gunman had opened fire on settlers and fled into the olive groves, the land they said needed to be cleared, 3,000 trees destroyed for security reasons. Have you ever thought of leaving?
Not even once. We are staying here. This is our land.
That's an ABC News report from October 2025. And from ABC Radio National, you're listening to Every Bite. I'm Jonathan Green, and today we're meeting Palestinian chef and author Sammy Tamimi. His new book is called Bustani, and it's an ode to the food and culture of his homeland. The book has taken on a different kind of resonance against the backdrop of war in Gaza. But the initial idea for it, well, that came long before the Hamas attacks of October 7, 2023. It came during a different kind of crisis, the COVID-19 global pandemic. And it wasn't written near the imperiled olive groves of the West Bank, but rather in the famous olive belt of Umbria in Italy.
The whole process, before I even knew that I'm going to write another cookbook, it started COVID. Me and my partner decided to run away from the craziness of London, packed the two dogs at the house, and we drove all the way to Umbria, where we have a house there. And we thought, okay, let's just stay for a few weeks until things kind of settle. And we ended up staying there for 8 months. And it felt kind of normal in a way, but also in a situation like this, you feel like you're in a bubble. And I missed, because it's also in the countryside, we didn't really see many people. And I was really homesick, and I missed the food, and also my family and my siblings, and talking to them, kind of, okay, phone. And they didn't get to get the Zoom chats and all of that. But I started, that was before I left Ottolenghi, and I was kind of doubting about what shall I do next. And I just started going for long walks, and it was spring, and Umbria's weather is a bit like Jerusalem. So there's quite a lot of similar herbs and weeds and seeds, and I started picking things and foraging and taking them back home. And my partner was saying, "You are crazy. You're gonna poison us." But it connected me. I mean, I remember talking to my sister, like, "Do you remember this kind of really bitter leaf?" And I kind of describe it and send her a picture, and trying to remember what's it called in Arabic, but also how we prepared it, and memories of my dad and my mom, and you know, going out the hills. And it really kind of created this a channel for me to feel less homesick. And I started doing all these notes, and only when we got back to London after 8 months, I started kind of looking at all the notes that I did, and I thought to myself, there's a lot of knowledge in there and a lot of personal memories, and I think people should read them because they're really important. They are important kind of chunk of the Palestinian memory in a way, or my memory in Palestine. And I started talking about it with friends about, you know, maybe I should do, I was aiming for a vegan cookbook. And I started talking to friends, and for some reason, my editor at Avery called me, and she's like, "Whatever you're working on, I'm going to publish it." And it's like, I didn't even want to do a cookbook. I was just like trying to kind of understand if it's something that I can possibly do. And this really pushed me, and they were very, very generous with me in terms of, you know, the budget, but also the time. Toward the end of the process of the food, October 7 happened, and I was kind of trying to write the main intro for the book. And they really gave me time to process everything. And unlike I'm just kind of jumping now from one thing to another, but unlike the other books, Bustani was created in my own kitchen at home, and all the recipes are tried in my kitchen, and I took my time because the previous books were part of, you know, the Ottolenghi kind of routine. I was still working 5 days a week, and I was doing recipes.
There was no Ottolenghi test kitchen for you.
Exactly. And also, you didn't have all these people kind of throwing things at you and tasting and saying something, and you need to take all of that in consideration. I took on myself the whole process and the whole responsibility. And I was working with one lady called Tamara that came and helped me once or twice a week to try the recipes, but all the writing I did myself. And I was worried about the writing, especially the big intro, because although I never say that I talk for Palestinians, because I am one of them, but every word that you choose is very important, and it need to be also clear. And I talk about my memories. When in Palestine, I talked about, you know, modern time Palestine. I wanted to show how inspiring and how driven Palestinians are with all the grim background. There's a lot of hope and a lot of not just sitting and crying about what happened. I want to do something really positive to myself, to the community, and where I am. But with Bustani, I talk about a lot of my memories and the family and people that I know and people that I met throughout writing the book. And it was really important that I kind of make it clear, because In the 70s, Jerusalem and Palestine was a different place. And there was this naive sense of hope that something is going to get better. And over the years, every time I visited, it just got worse and worse.
I've always seen your partnership with Ottolenghi as representative of that. I mean, there's a young man raised in Jewish Old Jerusalem. There is you raised in East Jerusalem. And yet you come together to form a really important partnership in food.
For me, people are human. And if you can't show your humanity, then, you know, you're kind of don't exist there. But at the same time, with everything happening now, I lost a lot of friends. And I also lost trust in Israelis because I feel like they are totally brainwashed in a way that you can't even talk to them. And I'm talking about some of my friends. It's just like, you know, you say this table is red and they tell you, no, it's black, but they argue about it. And you just realize that you can just bash your head in the wall and just kind of leave it. So there's no level of even kind of understanding between, you know, people.
I remember having a conversation with you at the time that Palestine was released, and your tone then was of, I think, a great joy and a sense of cautious optimism.
Yeah.
Is that changed?
I mean, I am naturally an optimist person, but the way things are going at the moment, I am not optimistic.
So is a book like Bustani, is that an act of preservation or of resistance?
Both. It's important for people, but also I think also of young Palestinians that have never been to Palestine and never had the tradition and also the aspects of culture and the memories that I had. And I think, you know, people should read it, but also it warms my heart to know that one day a Palestinian kid or an adult read it and connect to the.
Because you write the responsibility of involved in recording these recipes. It's not just writing down food.
No, but you know, as a food writer and a chef, I do. As a Palestinian, first of all, I find it quite heavy to talk about. I mean, I until recently, I shied from talking about politics and the trouble that goes back home. But I find myself now talking about that only. And I needed to make myself clear, first of all. But also documenting, yeah, of course. This is why I just decided to do Bustani. And if I'm going to do another cookbook, it's probably going to be, in a way, documenting more and more. We have a culture, we have a history, we have tradition, we have wonderful food that one day it might lose. The way things are going back home now, I mean, they're talking about taking over the West Bank, they totally destroy Gaza. Who knows what's going to happen? People are being killed and displaced again, and whether we're going to have Palestine or not, it needs to be documented. And, you know, I'm a privileged person that can write about the food and the culture and for people to read about it and wanting to know more and hopefully read about what really happens there.
We've mentioned foraging a few times, and I think it's such an important thing and on so many levels that it is about land, it is about food, it is about tradition and a people's habit.
Forage things nowadays are sold in markets. People forage and come and sell them because they know that other people can't really do it. Mm. We talked about, you know, wild sage and za'atar and different kind of like mallow and dandelion and wild asparagus. And all these things are kind of part of the cuisine, part of their repertoire. And people should be able to go out. It's a natural thing, but also it connects you to everything. I mean, I remember when we spent times in Hebron at my grandparents' house, and my grandfather had this bustan. This is why I call it the book Bustani. he put so much love and dedication, and for years we were laughing that he loved his piece of land more than he loved his wife. because it, you know, it's a self-sustain, but also he had this section of the garden where he never touched because he knew that there are all these seasonal weeds and greens that he can harvest in the season. And it taught me so much. It taught me the respect, but also the connection. You know, this nowadays I have my own fig tree in London and in Italy, and I know every time I pick a fig, it kind of reminds me of my grandfather and, you know, the bustan that he had, and that really strong connection to not just his bustan, but also everything that's around that.
It is, I mean, it's such a true thing, though, that and thinking of your grandfather, that it's impossible to grow that kind of garden, to have that sort of productivity without that sort of love and involvement. It's a necessary ingredient.
Yeah, and you know, he didn't have to do it. Hmm. But like I said, you know, naturally, Palestinians are farmers, and they, people that been displaced, the first thing they do is plant a lemon tree or an apple tree, and they always have a small, whatever you do, I mean, sometimes they even do it in tins and pots, lots of herbs, tomatoes, cucumbers, things that they can grow easily, because it gives them this sense of belonging, first of all, but also connect them to the soil, to the land, to where they came from, really.
Few things are more inextricably interrelated than food and the place in which it is grown. We eat from the earth. And a sense of identity can come with that. And I guess for many in modern culture, that connection is a thing that's been broken by convenience and the simple facts of urban life. For Palestinians, that disconnection is more visceral, emblematic of other disruptions of war and displacement. And yet, as Sami Tamimi points out, food can also be a point of intimate contact with a ruptured sense of lost place. A powerful link to what is essential in the self. Every Bite is your weekly journey to the places where food, culture, science and history collide. Every Bite tells a story. And thanks to our guest this week, Sami Tamimi. His debut solo cookbook is called Bustani, and it's available now. You can hear Every Bite on ABC Radio National or anytime on the ABC Listen app. Share us round. Just like food, really. Made for sharing. We love hearing what you think of the show. And perhaps you have an idea for a future episode. Shoot us an email. Everybite, all one word, at abc.net.au. Everybite at abc.net.au. Every Bite is made on Wurundjeri country and produced by Kim Jerrick. I'm Jonathan Green.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.